of this document here called Time for Action, A British Response to Kairos Palestine. It's great to see so many of you in here, so many people we know as well. It's a big panel today because there's been lots of people involved in this. I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves very quickly now. I'm Chris Rose. I'm the director of Amos Trust, and I'm the chair of Kairos Britain, the people who have put this together.
And my name is Sami Awad. Bring you greetings from Bethlehem, where I run an organization called the Holy Land Trust.
Hello, my name is Meg Rowe. I'm an artist and a children's occupational therapist. I come to this very late. I just went to Bethlehem last year for the first time.
Hello, I'm Warren Bardsley. I'm the convener of Kairos Britain, and I'm a semi-retired Methodist minister.
Hello, I'm Anne Farr, and I'm a member of Pax Christi, an international peace organization that has a UK branch.
Hello, I'm Mark Braverman. I'm a retired, I'm a recovering psychologist from the United States. And I'm currently honored to be the program director of Kairos USA.
And my name is Jeremy Moody. I'm the chief executive of Embrace the Middle East, a charity you may have seen around Greenbelt this weekend. And we're also sponsoring the Occupation Game, which you may have seen in Centaur just across the road. So that's me.
Fantastic. If you could pass that microphone back, you've got your own microphones down there, I think, somewhere. I don't know. Always the same. We're going to start off. Sami, could you just say a little bit, 2 minutes of background on what is Kairos Palestine?
Yes. For me, as a Palestinian and as a Palestinian Christian, Kairos Palestine is probably one of the strongest, most powerful documents that is written by the Palestinian Christian Church. Imagine this. For the first time, probably in our history, churches in the Holy Land agree on one thing. And this is what they agreed on. Kairos Palestine was an initiative of the churches in Palestine. And when I say all the churches, I mean all the churches, the traditional churches, evangelical churches, came together after a one-year process of intensive debate, theological discussion, but also in terms of what can the church do, came up with this document in December 2009, which was launched at that time. And the name of it is Kairos, which means a moment of truth, a word of faith, hope, and love from the heart of the of Palestinian suffering. And the core issue of Kairos Palestine is that the Israeli military occupation of the Palestinian people is a sin. It is not just illegal, it is a sin in the eyes of God and in the eyes of humanity. And any theology that supports the occupation is a theology that is far away from Christian teachings. Because Christian teachings is about justice, freedom, hope, love, and equality. And this is the heart of this message that was created in Palestine and sent out to the global church community.
Fantastic. Thank you. Warren, as the convener and the person responsible for getting people together and really pushing forward with Kairos Britain, could you speak to us a few minutes about why you've taken it on and what it's meant? Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chris. And thank you all for coming today. 2001, I retired from full-time ministry with the Methodist Church, and I look forward to many years of sort of quiet retirement. Here's the joke. How do you make God laugh? You tell him your future plans. My future plans did not include Israel-Palestine, but I went in 2005 with the Amos Trust, and I didn't know then that my life would never be the same again. I had been recently widowed and was still deep in grief. But during those 10 days in the Galilee, Jerusalem and Bethlehem, I saw and heard things that moved and shocked me. I met Palestinian families suffering cruel humiliation on a daily basis, yet with amazing courage, humor, and hope, contriving to live their lives. I saw the wall, the checkpoints, the stark structures of injustice. And when 3 years later I returned as a human rights observer with the World Council of Churches, the conviction of a great injustice grew and intensified. I had been involved in the anti-apartheid movement in the 1970s and 80s, and it was inconceivable to me, in terms of injustice, that anything could compare with that struggle. Now we were meeting South Africans telling us that this occupation was worse. I have many vivid memories of those 3 months in East Jerusalem, but one in particular stands out. Right at the end of our time, in early December 2008, we witnessed the eviction of a Palestinian family from the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of East Jerusalem, who had recently been made refugees twice over. A family we have been visiting on a regular basis. They were summarily evicted at 4 a.m. as Fawzia Al-Kurd, a woman of immense dignity, was tending her seriously sick husband, who died in hospital 10 days later, undoubtedly hastened by the shock of that experience. When we left Jerusalem to return to the UK a week later, they were living in a tent only yards away from the home from which they had been evicted. I'm not someone who is easily moved to anger, but I lived through that Christmas period in a state of barely suppressed rage. And then came Operation Cast Lead. And I tell that story not because it is unique or even untypical. Many here will have had similar experiences. Some here have lived and suffered under this occupation all their lives. I tell it because for me it epitomizes what is meant by the heart of Palestinian suffering. This brutal dispossession, not only of property and land, but of dreams, of futures, and a rightful stake in the future. And that is why in this document, which is launched today, we detail the injustices which describe the experience of occupation for ordinary Palestinian men, women, and children. I know that anger is not enough. I know that anger which is uncontrolled can be not only negative but destructive. But if fired by love, it can be a powerful engine for change. And it is this compassionate anger which drives us and which has largely led to the writing of Time for Action. It is, for those of us who have been involved in this process, a long journey and far from easy. At times, the project threatened to be stillborn. Its conception goes back over 12 months. Pentecost 2012, when 70 Christians, mainly from the British Isles, representative of a broad range of church traditions and theological perspectives, met on the island of Iona under the leadership of Naim Atik and Mark Braverman to engage with the Kairos Palestine document. And it's fitting that Mark has been with us at Greenbelt during this time. He has been throughout a huge inspiration. Many good things come out of Iona, apart from John Bell and the Wild Goose Worship Group. And something remarkable happened that week. We were evidently under the direction of the Spirit, the midwife who brings new things to birth. At the end, 60 of us signed a statement which has become known as the Iona Call and provides one of the appendices of the document. And it challenged the churches of Britain to take seriously the message of Kairos Palestine and significantly resolved to form a network to carry the vision forward. A steering group was formed which committed to writing this British response. Theologians, church historians, and activists were approached and requested to prepare working drafts. And I think I speak for all of us when I say that we want to thank those who responded so readily to our invitation. The 2012 Kairos USA document we use as a template, and Mark was very much involved in the writing of that particular document. An intensive 24-hour consultation was held in Shropshire in March, at which a wider group engaged with each other and with the drafts. Palestinian theologian Munter Isaac gave the keynote address. Revised drafts were prepared and circulated. Jewish and Muslim leaders were consulted. And a smaller group, together with a copy reader, worked to produce a final draft. In all, over 100 people have been involved in the writing, revision, and publication of Time for Action. So let me say very briefly what this document is. First and foremost, it is a response. It is a response to this document which Sammy introduced us to a moment or two ago, to this Macedonian cry for help from Palestinian Christians and church leaders, launched in Bethlehem almost 4 years ago. And that's why it's so important that Sami Awad, whose teaching and practice of nonviolent resistance through the Holy Land Trust has been so deeply influential, is with us today. And those of us who have been privileged to work alongside Palestinians and the Israeli peace activists who support them are constantly humbled, challenged, and inspired by their steadfast faith, hope, and love. So this is supremely an exercise in listening to what this document and the people whose lives and whose experience and whose suffering and hope lies behind it. A response of their word to us. And it's a response which takes very seriously Britain's historic responsibility for past and present suffering. It's not an interfaith document, although there is a chapter on interfaith, and that is as it should be. It's not an anti-Israel, much less an anti-Semitic document. And we make that very clear in many places. In fact, we're at pains to point out that unless the occupation ends, the future of Israel is under threat, as well as that of the Palestinians. And it's not a discussion document, primarily. We have had more than enough of discussion documents, which are even now gathering dust on the shelves of churches and denominational offices. But it will undoubtedly provoke energized debate and provoke sharp controversy. And that is what we hope for. Dialogue is always important. But if all this document does is lead to more talking, it will manifestly have failed in its purpose. The document needs to be read. You'll have a copy when you leave. The document needs to be read, not piecemeal, but in full, in order that it might have its real impact. No, this aspires to be a prophetic document, a prophetic statement, seeking to speak truth to power, a manifesto, if you like. And the overriding emphasis, therefore, is on action, effective action, non-violent action by individuals and communities. And Anne Farr will outline just what those actions will be that we recommend. So finally, this is what is meant by the Kairos, a critical moment in time, the Greek word which Jesus used as he began his world-changing mission in the Galilee. The time, the Kairos, is here, a moment pregnant with danger and opportunity. And the next word that Jesus speaks, you remember, is metanoia, usually translated repent, but about a change of mind and heart, and believing the good news behind this proclamation. Kairos spells a crisis for the church and for Christians, as it did for the churches of South Africa, because it goes to the heart of our creedal confession that Jesus Christ is Lord, and says you cannot support this occupation, this apartheid, and be with Jesus of Nazareth. It's not a both-and. It's an either or. And this is costly. We recognize that. It's been said more than once in the last few days. It will be costly in terms, perhaps, of how people regard us. It will be costly, perhaps, in that we may lose friendships. I remember, this is just a very brief anecdote, but it's a true one, which has stayed with me, that when I was in Jerusalem, I met many of the Maxon Watch, these brave Israeli women who were at checkpoints monitoring the human rights abuses. And one of them said to me, when I became a member of Maxon Watch, I lost 95% of my friends overnight. That was a cost for her. The cost for us may not be as great, but there will be a cost, because as Mark Braverman reminded us yesterday, in this time, carrying the cross, taking up our cross in terms of justice, means involvement in this struggle. And finally, that it's a choice, not for Palestinian against Israeli, or for Arab against Jew. It's a choice for justice, freedom, equality, and peace. And undergirding the whole of it, as with the original document, there is hope. A hope which infuses, undergirds it all. A cry of hope, as our friends reminded us, in the face or in the absence of all hope. A hope which looks and expects transformation by the grace of God. We believe that this document can be a catalyst for a mass movement within the churches, but only if we as churches and Christians seize the time, recognize this Kairos moment. Only if we grasp the present opportunity, because that is what Kairos means. Only if we become Kairos people, Kairos congregations, only if we heed the call from Bethlehem, will you help us to get our freedom back. The Patriots summoned people to choice and decision when they said, if not now, when? If not us, who? Or in the immortal words of Alice Walker, we are the ones. We are the ones we have been waiting for. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ron. Jeremy, I'm going to cut the applause short there because of time. Jeremy, can you just talk us through the document a little bit more, kind of how it's made up, just for those who are interested.
Okay. So it's a document, and like all documents, it's meant to be read. You're amongst the very lucky few, because most people will have to download this off the internet, and it'll take up all that. They'll forget to switch off from colour to black and white, so it'll come off and use up all your colour ink. And we all know that's very expensive to replace. But you're the lucky ones, because you'll get your free hard copy as you leave. And it's meant to be read. A lot of effort's gone into it, and it's a really great reference point. Our aim is to start this grassroots movement amongst Christians in the UK, very similar to the ones that started against apartheid in South Africa. Mark talks about this, and also against discrimination in the United States. But we needed a reference point, and this document provides that reference point. So do take it away and read it. It's a great resource, and hopefully it will stimulate discussion. It begins, first of all, by setting the scene, and Warren has already talked about that. It's very much a response to the Kairos Palestine document produced in December 2009. You should read both. They need to be read together. Then we go very much into the history. And this is a response from British Christians. So we want to acknowledge the role of Britain in creating this mess in the first place. And in fact, we are probably, I mean, we talk about America supporting Israel, but actually we in Britain have to take our share of responsibility for what's happening in Palestine today. First of all, the Christian Zionists, who really, if you like, turbocharged the movement for Jewish immigration, were British Christian Zionists. It was our mishandling of the mandate from 1920 to 1948 which really caused the mess. It was the Balfour Declaration of 1917. So there's a historical section in here which just goes through our responsibility and acknowledges, as Christians, our sense of shame but also our shame for the anti-Semitism, historic anti-Semitism, which gave rise to the need for a Jewish state. And we have to acknowledge that as well. So there's a history section which I commend to you. Then we look at the interfaith angle. And as Warren says, it's not really an interfaith discussion. But, you know, this is a place that is holy to Jews, to Christians, and to Muslims. So we want to put it in the context of interfaith dialogue. Then we look briefly at the theology and the whole issue of the theology of the land and how we reconcile particular understandings of prophetic promises in the Old Testament with the gospel and with the call for justice, which is also a biblical injunction. So there's a very good section on theology. Then there is a section on the realities on the ground. And one of the things that strikes me when I go and speak at places like Greenbelt and New Wine is that many people just aren't aware of what's happening on the ground. They're not aware of the indignities of the checkpoints, of settlements grabbing land. Those of you who saw Five Broken Cameras yesterday cannot fail to have been moved by that film. And if you haven't seen it, do go and see it because it will change your perception. So the realities on the ground, there's a great section here on the human rights indignities endured daily by Palestinians of all faiths, Christians and Muslims. And having set the historical scene, the theological scene, the interfaith context, and also looked at the realities on the ground, we finish off with the most important section, which is a call to action. Because we want you, having read this document, having looked further, go and talk to the Christian Zionists outside, get their perception, and then go away, prayerfully form your own view, look back at the Bible, look at what Jesus said about the land, which was not very much, because the land really isn't that significant in the New Covenant and in the gospel message. Having done all those things, then act, because as Warren said, it is time for action. And the final section is a great section. It says, go and see. You can fly EasyJet now to Tel Aviv. It's really cheap. Go and see, meet Sami and the Holy Land Trust, meet other Palestinian Christians, meet Palestinian Muslims, speak to Israeli Jews. Go and see, and then decide what you're going to do about it. And there's, in particular, a call on Christians, and this is perhaps the most controversial bit, but we're not ashamed of it, to reflect prayerfully on whether they should boycott any produce from the occupation. We want Christians to go away and prayerfully think about that themselves. We're not telling you to do it, but to go away and reflect prayerfully whether you should do it. So it's a great document. You must read it, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Again. Anne's going to come and speak to us about that call to action, how you can be involved, the things which we are suggesting you do, and we're hugely aware that many people who do things already, and we want to amplify that. Anne, over to you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Is that all right? So, Kairos Britain calls us to take action. As Christians, our actions are informed by listening and responding to the Word of God. Our actions are a response to the call of Jesus to work for justice. As he said in Nazareth, the Spirit has sent me to bring good news to the poor, to proclaim liberty to captives, recovery of sight to the blind, and to set free the oppressed, and to announce that the time has come when the Lord will save his people. That time has come for us. And we read the Word of God as a source of life for all peoples. It cannot be used to justify or support any injustice to any people. In the light of that Word of God, we then need to find out what is happening to the oppressed people. And as Jeremy just said, Kairos Palestine says, come and see, and you will know the facts and the people of this land. When we go, we need to go with those who will enable us to see and hear the reality of the occupation, that will enable us to listen to the people, to Palestinian and Israeli peacemakers. And then we need to tell their story to others. Going changes our lives, as many of us have found. If we can't go, we can welcome the Palestinian and Israeli peacemakers who come here, share their stories, and pass those on. And there are a wealth of films and books that we can also use to learn more, to be aware, and to share that awareness with those around us. Having reflected and having seen and learnt, we then take action. Some of that action includes taking political action. Kairos Palestine says, religion cannot favor or support any unjust political regime, but rather must promote justice, truth, and human dignity. We have a voice. We have political power. We can inform our political representatives in both the UK and in Europe of the effects of the occupation on both Palestine and Israel. We can demand that our governments challenge all violations of international law and denials of human rights, and hold to account those who are responsible for them. As we saw in the South African Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions, BDS, these are effective, non-violent means of protest in the struggle for justice, truth and human dignity. And we must take seriously those Palestinians and Israelis who call for boycott, divestment and sanctions in relation to everything that is produced by the occupation. Kairos Palestine endorses this call, asking churches and individual Christians to play their part. BDS increases awareness, it promotes discussion, and creates grassroots support that can persuade governments to take effective action and to change unjust policies. It is in the spirit of this, and for these reasons, that Kairos Britain urges congregations, clergy, and church leaders to learn more about the BDS movement and to become involved. Kairos Britain includes many actions that all of us can take in solidarity with Palestinian and Israeli peacemakers. It lists websites of Palestinian and Israeli organizations who are committed to working for justice. We can all do something. In all of this, prayer underpins and permeates everything that we do. It is not an alternative to action, but part of it. The Week for Peace in Palestine and Israel is this year the 22nd to the 28th of September. There is a card that has been produced by some of the agencies. There are a few left on the Pax Christi stall. Go and order some today. Order some and make that week for peace in Palestine and Israel 2013. Let's make it something that people remember. Let's make it something that shows that we are in solidarity, that we will pray, and that we will work for change, for justice, and for peace. This week, we have the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's speech, "I Have a Dream," a defining moment for change. This time in 1988, I was in South Africa, learning from them about their Kairos movement, about their moment of change, the moment that turned things upside down for them. Today, here at Greenbelt, we are invited to respond to the Prophet Micah's challenge to act justly and love mercy. We are all invited and challenged. We're invited and challenged to be part of this Kairos moment for change here in Britain, so that we can bring about a just peace in Palestine and in Israel. Let's make our commitment to that here and now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm going to ask Sammy, as both a Palestinian and a Palestinian Christian, why is this such an important document and your response to it?
All right. If I look in this room, I know many people of you who have been to Palestine and to Israel and who are historically active in the movement for peace and justice in the Holy Land. And many of us have reached a point where we feel a lot of effort and a lot of energy has been put in this, but when we look at the reality, we don't see much progress on the ground. And this is where I think the shift and change comes in, is when the churches take charge in making this peace happen in the Holy Land. When Christians around the world understand that we are as responsible for making peace happen in this land and are not just facilitators of peace between the Palestinians and Israelis, that we actually have an ownership. We have a historic claim into how the land where our Savior was born becomes a place where it shines the light of peace to the global community. This is why I think this document is important. This is why I think the role of the church is important. As you heard, especially the British church and the historic role the British church has played, maybe not aware of it, but bringing this conflict to where it is now, it is time for the church to make up for that lost time and lost experience and the violence that was experienced there. So this is very important for me. I say this as a Palestinian and as a Christian. And this is something that has been a growing discussion more and more. We see this in the UK. We see this even in the US, where churches are beginning now to discuss proactively what is our role in bringing peace to the Holy Land. So this is a challenge for all of us. I think for all those who follow faith, Jew, Christian, and Muslim sitting in this room, if you believe in the holiness and the sacredness of the land where our forefathers, where the prophet walked, where the message of God came to humanity, it is our responsibility to do something about this. We can no longer remain silent. And I'll end by saying, if I look on this room, I see the possibility of making this happen. If I imagine how many people were probably sitting in the launch of the Kairos South Africa support document here, maybe there were as many of you, maybe less. And you know what? They made a difference. So how willing are you to engage, to be proactive, to spread the word, to challenge, to lose friends even in the process? I have lost many, many friends, many Palestinian friends even in my process. But at the end of the day, as Mark always says, these friends will come back to you and thank you for the work that you did. This is why it's important for us to get engaged in this work.
Thank you so much, Simon. Mark, you've received quite a lot of vitriol this week, and I think the people campaigning are particularly annoyed that you've joined this panel for this launch. As the program director of Kairos USA, can we get the lecture back up? Sorry. As the program director of Kairos USA, can you give a response on that and your response to this document?
Well, I want to thank all of the people here and all of you for including me in this marvelous, marvelous effort. It's just such an honor and a blessing to have played some part in your journey, and I hope to continue to be vitally connected. We are witnessing here the emergence of a global movement of which this bold, inspired, prophetic, eloquent document is one more crucial part. You know, Kairos really begins in the Gospels, where it reads, "The Kairos is fulfilled," meaning the time has come, the time has arrived. Transform yourselves, and that's the good news. What I realized, and again, we keep talking about South Africa. When I went to South Africa in 2011, I realized that whereas, and this the occasion was for the South African Kairos group to officially welcome and endorse and embrace the Palestinian document of 2009. And I realized that whereas the Palestinian document is the cry of the oppressed, the South African document of 1985 was the confession of the complicit. That sets the tone. That was really the next step after the original Kairos that comes with the Gospels. And recall that the South African document, and you must Google it and you must read it, is written as a challenge to the church, not to the South African government, not to apartheid itself, a challenge to the church. It was a confessional document. And the U.S. document that followed and the document that we launched today is very, very much a confessional document. And to my mind, that is the heart of it, your confession as citizens of a nation state with its own history, your confession as Christians. When I went to South Africa and got that, what I had to do was to go home to my own people, my own church, and my own churches, and my own society, and say, as Warren just said, if not now, when? If not us, who? Yeah, and you have now arrived at the same place. As I mentioned before, this is a global movement. That's very important to understand. What's happening here is part of something that is popping up all over the world in response to the Palestinian cry. And so we have the South Africans, of course, the first, because they know. I was with them in Bethlehem in 2009 at the launch of the Palestinian document, and they were the most prophetic people in the room. We had people from the United States and the UK and Germany, and they were fussing and saying, oh my God, it says boycott. What are we going to do? Can we bring this home? And the South Africans sat back and said, hang on. They said, you will get there. This is what we're looking at right now. It took us 40 years. It may not take you that long. Hang on. We know what's coming, and we'll be with you. So South Africa, and now we have the UK, America, Brazil, the Philippines, Korea, India, Germany is coming on. They will be very, very, very strong. They face so much of the same. I mean, I wish I had time to tell the Germany stories from my own experience. They are ready. They are full on. They know what they have to confess, and their confession is, we're finished with our guilt, we are ready to move on and look to the future. I said to them, how many of you can't tell the difference between the anti-Jewish laws of the German Reich and the Palestinian call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions? How many of you don't know the difference? And they looked at me and they said, oh my God, he said it, thank you so much. I said, I'll make a deal with you. You stop seeing yourselves, and I'm talking to you too, you stop seeing yourselves as the worst criminals that ever walked the earth, and I will stop seeing myself as the worst victim that ever walked the earth. It's time for us all to move on. We have to move forward. So now here's the last point, and the point that I really want to make. Besides the point about this being global, and we have to work together, we are part of one body. And that body is growing, and it's growing stronger, just like we all broke bread together today. The yeast that the women put in from the parable, it's growing. And it's exploding now. So we're part of something that's growing. Chris asked me to mention, you know, the protests outside. Here's what's important about the protests going on outside and the stuff that was written about me. It's not an interfaith project, just like Warren said. Who's out there? Is it angry and fearful Israelis that we're going to try to hurt them? Is it the Jewish Board of Deputies, again, angry and fearful that we're going to hurt them, that this is hate for Jews? Who's out there? It's Christians. It's part of the, you know, they're part of the body. This is a church struggle. This, again, is what I learned in South Africa. It's a church struggle, and that's what's important about it, and that's what's transformative about it, and that's what's hopeful about it. This has to happen within the church. It is a transformative experience. That's what John was saying in the Gospels when he said, the metanoia, it's time to transform ourselves as a community and as a body. And if we take a look at the South Africans, that's what they were doing. Sometimes it was just a few of them, and they were struggling with their own churches and with their own people. And Martin Luther King, when he's sitting in the jail in, we say Birmingham, yeah? When he's sitting in the jail in Birmingham, he was responding to his own people saying, Martin, back off. This is not the way to do it. And he said, let's go. Let's struggle about this. I'm going to tell you what the church is about, and the true church is going to join us. And the true church, the real church, the church within the church, is going to take this forward. That's what this is about. We are one body. We are one community. So let's go back to the first Martin Luther, yeah, who did just that. That was a Kairos moment. We are at another moment of transformation, of reformation, reforming. Here you stand. You can do no other. You are putting your own house in order. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Again, I'm going to cut the applause short. Coming to Greenbelt, it's always wonderful. We get crowds like this. It's fantastic and inspirational. But many of you go back to churches, and the question is, what do we do in our church? What does it mean? Meg, you're going to come and answer, I think, possibly the hardest question of the lot now, and talk about your experiences of that, if you could grab this.
Okay, hello. That's very daunting, talking after all these fantastic people, and it's wonderful to have them all here. I went to Bethlehem last year, and I met Sammy for the first time in Bethlehem, and it felt so prophetic what you were saying in that little room in Bethlehem. Thank you so much, and that transformed my life. I'm an artist, and I went to a school in Bethlehem, because what I want to say is, whatever you do in your ordinary lives, there's something there that you can do to help this cause. It's our brothers and sisters in Palestine are calling to us, saying, will you stand with us? And again, I was in the Shepherd's Fields. I can't remember the name. Is it Betzer Hall? Is that what it's called? Yeah. The Shepherd's Fields in a YMCA. And this guy was saying, and there's this Kairos movement that we've started, and we are calling all the churches in the whole of Palestine and Israel have come together and are calling to the church worldwide, will you stand with us? And this one has said yes, Canada has said yes, South Africa has said yes, and I just put my hand up and said, what about Britain? Have we said? And he said, oh no, no response from Britain. I was ashamed. I just was completely ashamed. And I just thought, that's it. We've got to, you can't say nothing. Either we are standing with them or we're not. They are calling to us, and we've got to respond. Okay, so I'm an artist. I'm not in any big organization. And so I thought, I was working in a school in Islington, so I thought, I'll try and link up. My daughter wanted to go to Palestine, so we went with the Amos Trust, because I thought, I was a bit afraid, but I thought, well, if she's going, I'll go with her. So I went with her, and I thought, I'll try and link up with a school in Bethlehem. So I did that. And we tried to have Skype links, but it was difficult. But anyway, I said, look, I'm going to bring some paintings from Islington to you, and can I bring some paintings back with me? Anyway, we did a workshop. It was great. They gave me a disc of artwork to take home with me. And when I opened it up, I just saw these amazing pictures, picture after picture of the wall. And the head teacher had said to me, when children get to about age 10, all they draw is the wall. On the front of your Time for Action that you'll get, you'll see my little version of one of this child's pictures. It's not just the wall. It's an olive tree breaking down the wall. There is hope. These children have hope that there will be a broken down wall, but there is a way of seeing over that wall, and there is a way of bringing peace and justice. So go and buy some Zaytoun olive oil. That's something that you can do, okay? And it's on sale here. And look on websites and see if there's a school that you can link up with. We started Skyping, and we sent letters out there. And then on the Skype, they were waving at each other saying, oh, hello, I've got your letter. And it was so fantastic. You know, this is a global world. You can do that. Go and visit if you possibly can. There's ways of doing it for young people, doing it cheaply with Amos, going to the YMCA out there, and it's just fantastic. And I felt so safe out there, and I'm quite a scared person. But the people are beautiful. But you just need to see it for yourself, if you can at all. If you can't, then go and see some films. This Five Cameras is brilliant. Five Cameras, and there's all sorts of other ones. Go to the Amos stand and the Embrace, and there's all sorts of other things going on. And ICAD. ICAD, go and build some houses. My son went out and built a house, and then when I went last year, it had already been bulldozed again. So that was another big thing, meeting the mum of the children whose house had been bulldozed. And we sat, and she'd made us a wonderful supper of all these pizzas and things in a tent. And I hugged her and just burst out crying and just said, I'm so sorry. And we had to have an interpreter. And I said, my son had come and helped build your house. And I'm just so sorry. This is just so wrong. It's just so wrong. Okay, whatever. This should not be happening. Anyway, I'll stop there.
Thank you so much. Okay, thank you for the applause. I'm going to cut it short again. We've got about 10 minutes for some questions, and it is questions, please. I know many of you in this room, and for you to ask questions and not make statements is quite a challenge. So please, can it be a question? There is a chance afterwards over in Centaur Lounge. There's a reception for all of you. Welcome. There isn't enough drink and food, but we kind of believe in somebody who broke bread and all that stuff. So just turn up and rock up, and you can ask questions then, okay? So there's a few minutes of questions. There's a roving mic. Please be questions. We've got about 10 minutes, or about 7 minutes. I need to wrap up with a couple of comments. Please do stand up when you get it, and we'll take a couple as well. And then we'll try to take a couple together afterwards. In fact, if you can, yeah, far away.
David McManus, I lived in India for a long time. What parallels do members of the panel see with the struggle over many years to have self and to for the call to quit India?
Okay, mine's back. So what similarities with the call to quit India? Anybody feel equipped to answer that? We work in India, so I can do a bit of work on that. Anybody else fancy at all? Sammy, are you up for that one?
I'm just going to say I'm going to have a session.
I think, Sammy, do you want to answer?
Yeah, so just for briefly, I'm going to have a session on the question is, where is the Palestinian Gandhi? And I invite you to come to this, and we'll discuss the similarities between the Indian movement, what happened there, and what's happening in Palestine today.
So where is that, Sammy? When is it? That's, you don't know, do you? Okay, but have a look in your programs. Sammy will try to work out when he's speaking next. Obviously, he's prepared for that one. Okay, next question, please.
Susan Murphy. Just a quick question about how has the document, or the, even the idea of it and the Kairos statement, been received by the official churches in this country? We think we know the answer. What can we do to change it? Thank you.
Let's take three questions at the same time. So we'll do.
Yes, thank you. In that vein also, as the document is addressed to Christians and to the churches, I'm just want to know what, how do you think we can work with the other side, other Christians, your brothers and sisters who disagree, strongly disagree with the document? How do we engage with them in this process? Thank you.
Mine's somewhat related to the first question. Who are the senior clerics, because I'm afraid they are important people, who we can at least get information and support from, because we've already tried and the C of E hasn't given many answers.
Okay, so about how do we engage the church? Who wants to have a go at this? I think that hopefully you've got some microphones there. Otherwise, we're really going to be struggling.
I'll have a quick go at the question of how to engage with the churches and fellow Christians from my experience in the United States. I think the first thing, and I had some conversations with people over the last couple of days about this, I think the first thing you need to, when you're involved in that conversation, you have to make a decision about whether you're really involved in a conversation and be ready to walk away from something which looks like where you decide that this is not a conversation. You're not going to change the person's mind. They're shouting at you in one way or another, even though it may be not be in a loud voice. And go and make some decisions about where to really spend your time and your energy and to put your heart where you can make a difference. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I think that, I think the biggest challenge is not the people outside, but the people within the church institutions, and the higher up you go, the more that that makes a difference. And remember that this is grassroots, so the change will come from the bottom up. You can change your institutions, starting in your conversations, in your congregations, with your pastors, then in your diocese or councils or however it's structured, and then it works its way up, and that is the process. The people at the top will be the last. You will get to them, but they will be the last, but it goes from the bottom up.
Thank you very much. Anybody want to add to that at all?
Can I quickly add? At our church, there were four of us that went to Palestine, and then we came back and we sort of reported back to the church, and we said, will you stand with us? And actually, half the congregation just stood there and then. So we were able to then get signatures from everybody and send a letter saying, we want this to happen. So I think it's grassroots. It starts with us, with your own self and then your own church. We've got a website, Kairos has got a website, and I'm hoping my church is going to be the first Kairos church to put its name up there. I mean, we've only just launched it today, so I've got to go back to my PCC, and I'm going to have to do it the right way and put forward a motion and all the rest of it. But I'm really hoping that that will happen, and you can do the same. So go to your PCCs and then get your PCCs to go to the deanery synods. And I don't know what it is in the Methodists and the URCs.
They've got far better systems,
all
I'm
that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Just do it. We can do it.
Fantastic. Let's have some more questions.
Thank you, all of you. And my name is Ben from Combatants for Peace. And my question is kind of related to a comment in a way. I went out to meet the protesters outside and had a bit of a chat with them. Wasn't much of a chat, really. It was more of a kind of big argument. One of the things that they used to demonstrate that they are right is God. In fact, he was telling them what to do. And he was definitely a he. And he was definitely like them, mostly white. And one of the things of my challenges to this very important document coming through the churches is, how does the church and churches and churchgoers and Christians like yourselves, a majority of you I believe, expand the notion of God to a bit more than the singular monotheological idea of a person in the sky? And I know that many people here are progressive and thinking differently, but I invite that challenge into this process of stepping into direct action to end the Israeli occupation of Palestine so that Israel and Palestine can be free of this occupation.
Thank you, Ben. Can we have the other two people? Can we just have those quickly as well, and we'll then...
Hello, my name's Katrina, and this is my question. How do you think the Kairos movement links to Isaiah's prophecies of a highway opening up.
Hi, would anyone in the panel like just to comment very briefly on the John Kerry peace process and whether that's just a kind of cynical public relations exercise, or is there actually any hope that something useful might come out of it?
Okay. So, peace process, who wants to have a go at... Oh, Jeremy wants to slaughter the peace process. Engage with the peace process, sorry. Jeremy, fire away on the peace process quickly.
Okay, well, I mean, first of all, we should pray for the peace process. You know, as Christians, we have to have hope that it will lead somewhere. The problem is that what's on the table at the moment is a two-state solution, which frankly is no longer viable, as many of you know, from 650,000 settlers in East Jerusalem and the West Bank. Somebody said that negotiating peace with the Israelis is like negotiating on how you divide up a pizza while one side is eating the pizza. And that is exactly what's happened. And as you know, if you've ever eaten a pizza and you've shared it with somebody and they just leave you the horrid crusty bits at the edge. And that's really that's being left. That's what's on the table for the Palestinians at the moment. And the problem is that we have a government in Jerusalem, which is the most pro-settler government of Israel since its creation in 1948. They've made a settler who lives in a settlement the Minister of Housing and Construction. So this is not a government that really has a vision for peace in Jerusalem. And so I think many people are gloomy about the prospects for peace coming from this round of negotiations from the John Kerry Initiative. Some people are thinking more about a one-state solution where Jews and Palestinians live side by side. That is also fraught with difficulty. But as I say, as Christians, we have hope. So let's just pray for those negotiations.
Thank you very much indeed. I'm going to wrap it at this point because we are running out of time. And I'm going to answer a couple of things here. We very much hope that this is part of a path. I hope that's... Mark, is that what you're going to allude to? Or are you going to...
I wanted to say something about that.
Very quickly,
John Kerry, he's my Secretary of State, so I claim the privilege.
Okay, go for it.
My prayer is that the peace process not succeed and that the two-state solution, which is on the table, will not succeed because Kerry is going to build the occupation. They're pouring money into this so-called Palestinian state. And they're building the prison, and that's what's happening now. So I think we need to pray that we can change that process and that there will be a real peace process. I also want to respond very quickly to what Ben said, which is that he's calling our attention to the fact that we have to do the theology, that what we are transforming is the theology. Doing theology is a transformative process, and that's exactly what we're about, and it's really the heart of what we're doing.
Absolutely. To take that forward and to finish today, we very much hope we are part of people who are on a path through the desert and that there will be brighter days ahead of us. That's what we are all committed to. As we said, there's a real theological engagement in this document. The theology is central to it, and it's a theology of inclusion, and it's a theology which embraces difference as well. But to finish, and this again picks that up, is some words from Kairos Palestine themselves. We sent them the document, we asked for their comment on it, and we asked them to comment about the launch today, and this is what they said. For 40 years, Greenbelt has gathered Christians together to connect, pray, learn, and act upon world concerns, debating about political engagements in international injustices and using vigorous campaigning through various forms of art that can break through the frustration of language. We are most impressed that the Palestinian cause remains on the Greenbelt agenda, and many Palestinian speakers, singers, and artists have witnessed at Cheltenham rallying support to end the injustice and uplift the dignity of humanity. The British Working Group has been blessed with thinkers and theologians whose deep analysis of the situation is based on thorough study and understanding of the complex situation in which we live. So what better time and what better venue to say, this is Kairos, a time for action. Please do as you leave. Take these books, read them, and act. Sign up as individuals, as churches, as organizations on the website. If it's a little bit clunky to start off with, it's just been relaunched today, but it should all be happening. Sign up, get involved, talk to us, visit, do all the things today. Come over and drink Embrace's wine or whatever else they provide for us now. Get involved, and thank you so much for everybody who's been involved. I particularly want to mention Isabel, who's been trying to get the website to work for days and struggling against that, but all those people who have put this document together, and thank you for journeying us through that path through the desert. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, another really inspiring talk in Hebron. Thank you for joining us. The exit is at the back up the stairs. Please go out that way, and that's where you can collect your Kairos documents if you want to pick one up on the way out. The next event here is Dr. Mike Saunders and Garth Hewitt, and that